G'day everyone, this is Tom Uren, author of Seriously Risky Business, and we're here for another Between Two Nerds discussion with The Gruck. G'day.
G'day Tom.
I'd like to thank this week's sponsor, Nucleus Security, which makes a unified vulnerability management platform. And I'd also like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation for their support. So a couple of weeks ago, Gruck, I wrote a piece that kind of recapped the history of crime phones. So crime phones are where criminals have bought phones that are meant to protect them from police by being strongly encrypted. And they're usually marketed amongst criminals. The piece went through a long history of where, although it was initially very difficult for police, they've had, since then, across the world, a long string of successes where they've either taken down those networks, but mostly they've taken them down and also got access to the messages. And so those messages have resulted in thousands of arrests, tons of drugs seized. And it became such a long list that I decided in the end that crime phones had actually been a boon for police in the longer term. But that made us wonder, if you're trying to protect yourself from the state with a technology solution, is that even possible?
All right. So this is a very, very rich topic. I want to start by recontextualizing the concept of crime phone a little bit. So I think phone is a bit of a misnomer because these things, you know, a lot of them will have the microphones taken out. And I think the way to think about them is more of a like a crime space client or terminal. So crime space would be the social network for criminals, sort of like a MySpace, because it's really, it's very basic, right? It's pretty ghetto. And so these phones, sort of the point is not necessarily the technology that they provide, right? People are not going, you know, it doesn't have perfect forward security. What sort of, you know, post-quantum encryption solution do you provide? You know, that's not really what they're looking for. It's sort of like, well, do my suppliers and my clients use this so I can speak to them?
Well, I mean, there was a minimum hurdle, I guess, in terms of encryption, right? It wasn't to that kind of detail, but it was the crims wanted to get the warm fuzzies about the security.
Well, this is exactly it, is that it was done on vibes. Like,
right, yeah.
If you're a encryption and cybersecurity expert, you are probably not a crime boss. Like those are slightly different skill sets.
Yeah.
And so what was sort of happening is the people putting these phones together would basically be selling them via word of mouth, right? Like there was all this advertising and all this other stuff as well, particularly in the Netherlands on the crime forums, which was, you know, quite funny. That's a thing. But really it was sort of like, well, my mate Johnny is, you know, using this thing and he says it's good. And so I trust him. So I'll tell all of my friends to use it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I heard here from police, that it was like shady deals in pubs.
Right, right, very much so. Particularly with the older generation stuff, when it started, you know, you had the PGP Blackberries, which were used extensively. And the way that those were set up was that the device was sort of configured by the seller, and it would have the keys were provisioned at that point. So you'd have the guy running the BlackBerry server would have access to the public and private keys, which, you know, not great.
Not great for security, but very convenient for the person selling the phone.
Well, and for the user, right? I mean, do you expect...
And subsequently for the police.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, think about it. You've got like Snake, the 58-year-old Hell's Angel, who is selling meth. And you're not going to say, okay, so what you need to do is you want at least a 372-bit PGP key that you have provisioned with, you know.
First of all, buy a Linux laptop.
You're kind of limited by your customer base in a way, I guess. You can't really expect them to do very much. So, right, all the stuff got provisioned, it got handed out, and it was made secure by the fact that they would only peer with other providers. So they would firewall everyone who wasn't one of their peers. So They could only talk to each other. And that was part of the security.
Right. I mean, at least in the case of Phantom Secure, it was a BlackBerry type solution, I think, originally. And that mm-hmm. was quite well thought out, as long as you did key management right.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, yep. for Phantom Secure, which was one of the first ones, certainly the first one I'd heard of, mm-hmm. they never did get access to messages. So in that sense,
right. So
it worked, right?
Right. And so one of the big ones was in Canada, and due to the key management error, the Mounties were able to get access to like a million messages that they're still reading or something like that. And it's just...
Yeah. In the ones I went through, mostly the police were able to get access, and it seemed right. like there was different methods. And I guess for crime phones, it seems like the answer is pretty clear to me that mostly when you've got a state trying to get to you,
mm-hmm.
they'll probably succeed. To some degree, it's weight of numbers. But I was wondering, is there anything wrong with what the criminals are doing, or is that just the way it is?
Right, yeah.
Is there an answer, air quotes?
All right. So the PGP BlackBerry, if the key management was done correctly, was perfectly secure. But because BlackBerry stopped existing, basically, there was a problem that, you know, after, I guess, 2008 or 2010 or whatever, there were no new BlackBerries. So you'd have your multimillionaire crime boss using a phone that's falling apart. Yeah, the keys are coming off. And
and there's no cachet in them anymore either.
Right, right. So, you know, things had to sort of upgrade to the Android era. And I think here's where they sort of missed a trick, because, you know, if you want to be secure against the state, you're probably better off hiding amongst the fish than trying to make your own pool.
Right.
You know, so if you come and you make this isolated, separate, special, super encrypted, super secure, concentrated set of high value targets, then it needs to be cracked and it's over with. Right. But yep. if you use Signal, then they have to find you first amongst all the other Signal users, which I think...
Yeah.
I think that adds a layer of difficulty to the issue, right? So you now have millions of potential targets as opposed to 800 or 1,000 or 10,000, whatever it is.
Yeah. When we spoke about it, Patrick and I, he mentioned that apparently the Sinaloa cartel, when it sends people into the States for short-term trips, will give them just a new iPhone with Signal on it, like just totally blank. But that is their short-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing you made me think about was spies. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, spies don't get special phones that can only talk to other spies. Because it's
secure,
obvious why,
right?
Because that would be a dead giveaway.
Right, if CIA, they're a CIA phone and KGB phone, you know, and it's
right, yeah.
they're secure because they can't talk to each other, you know. Yeah, like spies do things like naked in, naked out, where you show up, you purchase a phone for cash, you set it up in the way that you've been told to set it up, you use it, and then, you know, you smash it with a hammer and throw it in a river.
Yep.
If you've ever been to security conferences, you've probably met people who have a phone that they are going to throw in the trash when they get to the airport on the way home.
And I guess thinking about spies a bit more, at least some of the reason they can do that is because they have some, I guess thinking of the CIA or a Western equivalent, they have an embassy where they do have comms they trust, right? So that mm-hmm. is their equivalent of a crime phone. And so they can do all the secret stuff in a place that's denied to the enemy. Whereas
right.
when you're a criminal, you don't have that option.
You don't have that. Yeah. When you get to the embassy and you get to like your secure comm center, you don't have to worry about certain security threats because this belongs to you. I mean, there might be technical penetrations, or there might be someone has been recruited, or, you know, like there's a set of security concerns. But generally speaking, you've got that to rely on.
Well, I guess a state like can harvest the personnel and the effort to convince themselves they're safe, right? And so mm-hmm. that's, I mean, criminal organizations
right.
do that as well, but they're just less capable, I guess.
They're less sophisticated.
Yes.
So if you, I don't know if you've ever seen any of the web pages selling those secure phones. So they will list every acronym possibly related to the phone. And
as
so
long as they use military-grade encryption, it's sure to be fine, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, like this is a client base that thinks military-grade encryption is better than the other encryption, right? Yeah. So yeah, you have your TLS 1.1, AES 256 with your AES 128, CTR, CVC, everything just listed. And as a consumer, you could look at the two websites and you could see like this one's got 8 acronyms and this one's only got 5. So it's
and
pretty obvious.
And then you'll go with whatever Johnny down the pub says.
Right. Well, I mean, this kind of makes sense. On the one hand, you could tell that 8 is bigger than 5, but you also don't really know what they mean. Mm. And then someone you trust, but someone you can reach, tells you which one is good. And so now if you have a problem, you can go and give Johnny a thump.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to sort of operate like that, particularly if the people who you can ask for opinions don't know any more than you do.
Yeah. So I started thinking that the problem with crime phones in particular is that you've got some point of vulnerability that the state can eventually reach out and apply pressure. And that is either like a particular server or a person. Mm-hmm. And so most of the time, like you said, if you become big enough and bad enough, they'll focus that attention and they'll eventually find it.
Right.
But I was wondering if the way to avoid that is just to be super stealthy. So you've got an admin, you just make sure no one knows they're the admin.
Yeah. So, I think bringing up the spy stuff is probably right in that the approach you want to take is sort of, don't be detected, don't be seen for, it's the CIA 3 C's of operational security. It's cover, concealment, and compartmentation. Cover is the ostensibly legit reason for why you're doing something. It's the sort of the story that explains what's happening. Concealment is hiding it, so it's not, visible, whatever. And then compartmentation is making sure that, you don't contaminate with other things. So if it is destroyed or it is compromised, the damage is limited. And I think one of the things you can see is that a lot of the messages that these guys send are not compartmented properly. One of my OPSEC sayings is, OPSEC will get you through times of no encryption better than encryption will get you through times of no OPSEC. Right.
Yeah. So it's quite incredible in the press releases.
Mm-hmm.
The one that the AFP, the Australian Federal Police, were involved in, they were actually helping to run the network. So the phones had cameras. They had their GPS still, and it was surreptitiously attaching the GPS coordinates to messages sent to the police. but the incredible thing is that the crims would say, okay, I've received this shipment. They'd have a photo, helpfully tagged with GPS for the police. And so they were behaving as if it was a perfectly safe space.
Right. But they have to, because they run on trust but verify. Right. If I ship money to you through the mail, I will take a picture of it and then send you the tracking number so you can see it.
Yeah.
And if it gets vanished in the mail, then it's not my fault. Like, it's something went wrong with the mail. I showed you all the stuff. But if you never get that, I'm like, dude, I sent it to you. And you go, well, I didn't get it. So you still owe me $250,000 because that's what you were supposed to pay and you didn't pay. Right, so you have to do these things.
Yeah, so these devices were often operating across what I'd call trust boundaries, in that they use them to communicate between internationally.
Yes.
And so, presumably you have one organized crime group in a country.
That's the crime space angle, is that it's certainly useful internally to be able to say, we've got a problem with Johnny down the pub. Someone go give him a thump. That's your job, Dave.
Yeah, to me that seems useful, but not.
Yeah, but you could do that. You could do that in person. You could
exactly,
phone up and be
like,
Johnny needs his pint down the pub, Dave.
Yeah.
You can do what's called Aesopian language, like Aesop. You can say what needs to be said without specifically saying those words, right? And so that's fine internally, but that's not going to work if you need to call Colombia and get another shipment of cocaine.
No, that's right. Right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, at some point you literally need to go, okay, how much is it going to cost for a kilo? This is the number of kilos I need. You need to ship it to here. Okay, what's the place I need to send the money, and have you received it? It's right, it's those trust boundaries, but that's also kind of the problem with the compartmentation, is you have to break those compartment walls these people talking back and forth, which means that you need, in order to be secure, you need to compartment the phone activity entirely from your own personal activity. So there was one case of a guy in Britain who got busted, who, like, he was quite good, was all, you know, like, user 17, and, you know, there's no, you know, hey, this is, you know, so-and-so at this address. And the way that they got him was when he took a picture of something he'd received, and his dog was in the background, and you could see the dog collar, and it had, like a phone number of, like, you know, if I'm missing, call my owner. It's always funny to make fun of those OPSEC failures, but the problem is, it's a thing from The Wire, you know, how can you never be late? How can you never be slow? That's life.
Yeah.
It's always going to happen. You're going to make mistakes. At some point, it's going to happen. And I think one of the problems, in a way, with the crime phone, like with the crime space idea, is it gives them the sense of security that they're in a totally private place, and then they can relax.
Yeah.
And so when they might have taken some precautions of being like, okay, well, I'm on a payphone, so I'm not being monitored, but I don't want to say, like, hi, this is Brian. Yeah, yeah, you know, from Sydney. No, yeah. No, the other Brian. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so they would know to be cautious. And I think by getting this sort of false sense of security that because it's completely safe, you don't need to be cautious anymore.
Yeah.
You can just trust the entire thing to be secure. And then when it's not, it turns out that they have no other layers of protection. You know, there should be multiple layers and all this other stuff. Like, one of the things that the Germans used to do for the spies that they were sending to England was they had this two-part cover story. So there'd be the regular cover story, but then there'd be this secondary cover story that was, like, slightly embarrassing. So the idea is that if you've been kept for a while and you're being pressed and they can tell that you're lying, when you give the second cover story, they can think, okay, well, he didn't want to say that he's escaped from jail or that he is on the run from whatever, or, you know, something that's not great, but it's not exactly spying.
Yeah.
Right. And so that approach, that sort of belt and braces, would have served these guys very well.
Well, presumably they were doing something like that beforehand, right? Because these organized crime groups existed. They existed in the age of relatively easy...
Before BlackBerries even, yeah.
Yeah, before strong encryption was a thing that you could buy, right? So they were presumably communicating over phones and talking in person and getting stuff done.
And during the 80s, there was a lot of cocaine moved, even without crime phones. So presumably there is some way of contacting... you know, Colombia and ordering drugs to Australia without using WhatsApp or Signal.
That's right. Yeah, so, I mean, to me, the advantages for international deals are where it's at. But but I guess in the past, I don't know what they did. Did they just travel? And
I assume they did. I think that must have played quite a big role. I think there's probably a lot more personal relationships set up, and then phone calls of like, yeah, it's me, the same again, same place, bye. I think something we've touched on is how a lot of the these networks are sort of more about the people, in a way, right? So it's that people know each other, and, you know, once you become part of that world and, you know, someone will introduce you to someone else, then those are the relationships that you build on and use. And even though there are these crime groups, they're not like Pepsi Cola or something, right? Where you, you know, there's the organization and you contact the front desk and ask to be routed to, you know, the VP of sales for North America. Clearly, I think that the relationships probably covered quite a lot of it historically. And then that was still the case with the crime phones, that they just provided a faster communications base for those same relationships, which is like, that's why I emphasize the crime space aspect of how it's a social network for criminals where they can contact each other and send messages about stuff and they can do their crime in their peer group, which is, you know, what they do. And I think there's sort of two things going on here in terms of like, can you be safe from the state? Because on the one hand, like, I don't know if there's a technological solution that is sufficient to protect you from a country that operates 12 aircraft carriers.
Well, right? I'm not even thinking particularly about the US in this case.
Right.
It's just, I think if any country is out to get you, if your country is out to get you in particular,
correct,
it's just an extremely hard place to be. I guess Russian criminals are proof that if other countries are out to get you, that's not necessarily the end of the world.
But I think that's, you know, in a way, that's the important point. And I did a talk with Ben Nagy about communication security. And this is sort of one of the things that came up, which is that if the NSA is after you, then it's not that you want a secure phone. It's that you want no phone at all. You know, and then I think there's interesting ways that the technology has failed. This is my personal opinion on the EncroChat. So I don't know that that's what happened, but it's what I believe happened. So EncroChat was based on what became Lineage OS. So it's this open source version of Android. So it's not designed to be secure in a way that we would think about it, but it's billed as secure because it's like, well, it doesn't come with the bloatware that you would get from like Motorola. It's secure. And that's kind of true, but that's, you know, it's true in a way that doesn't matter when you're talking about states.
Uh-huh.
Like it's an irrelevant sort of truth. And so the thing with Lineage OS is because it's sort of meant more for developers playing around and stuff, it didn't have a good set of instructions on how to do a secure production build, right? Their instructions on how to do a build of their OS said somewhere like, be sure that you change the keys, right? Because the Android source code ships with these default signing keys, which are used to sign the OS. And then you can only upgrade the OS if it's signed by the same key, right? So it can upgrade to a new version signed with the same key.
Right.
And I think given the complexity of the process to create keys, the fact that it wasn't explained how to do it, I think
so
that
there was no walkthrough of how to...
Exactly, right? So yeah. I think that what was happening was that they were shipping the default public keys that everyone has access to as the OS keys, right? And so when the update server... Like, so one of the servers that was found was an OVH box, and the French got access to it. And I think that was used to ship updates to the phone. And that meant that you could take one of the images, modify it by adding or replacing, you know, a binary with another one.
Whatever you like.
Resign it. Yeah. Resign it with the public keys because everyone has them. And then it would be applied, you know, it would be updated. You know, based on what I read about how there were things like they added malware, and it got shipped, and then EncroChat tried to remove it, and then it got added back. I think the only way that makes sense is if the update was compromised,
right?
And that makes sense if the keys weren't changed, which makes sense because it wasn't explained how to do that. So
that certainly seems plausible. I also wonder if police always have an incentive to hide when they've got an insider.
Right,
so that was the other theory that occurred to me. Both seem plausible.
I think both are plausible, yeah. You know,
that one's more attractive because it's funnier.
Right.
But, you know, OPSEC failure because of lack of documentation is.
Right. I mean, I think that that's brilliant. Is like it, or you know, someone just didn't read all the way to the end where it said, you know, to find out how to add new keys, click here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that this is an intersection of some of the things we've been talking about. One is that, you know, people make mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. Like humans, you know, humans make human errors. That's life. And then it's the NSA thing of like, people make mistakes and we will exploit them. So I think this is the thing is that, you know, you can have the best technological solutions. If you attract the attention of a state, any mistake at all that's been made is going to be fatal. And
right, yes.
I think the use of a crime phone in itself is an error. You know, as we've said, it stands out, which, you know, you won't have if you're just using an iPhone and Signal.
Yeah.
And there's certainly problems with trusting your crime business to an iPhone, but in many ways it's safer than, you know, trusting it to Johnny from down the pub's phone. And yeah, I sort of wonder where if it doesn't need to be a technological mistake, it just needs to exist and the state is going to smash you.
Right. Yeah. It depends. What's that saying? You can be under the microscope or on the radar.
Right. There's a difference between being on the radar and under the microscope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you're on the radar and you make mistakes, it's not a problem. But if you're under the microscope and you make mistakes, it's a problem.
Yeah. And then yeah. When you become a big enough international or a big enough crime group, you end up in under the microscope.
So I guess here's the thing is that crime phones are a technological solution to a problem that cannot be solved with a technological solution. Sort of the takeaway here is that you can be famous, you can be a criminal, but you can't be a famous criminal.
Or not for long.
Not for long.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Good talking to you, Tom.